The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmadge, Tony Bemis, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
And this is episode 111.
One
is the loneliest number.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do.
Okay.
Two
Tony,
can
help.
Be as bad as one. Little three dog night for you all there. Oh.
So is it still lonely if there's three ones? I'm one.
I don't know.
One,
well,
Gary's one, and
Grant's one. What is 111?
111?
No. In binary, what's 111?
Oh, it's 7.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's the name of our episode.
7. There you go. All
right. Oh, man. That was, okay.
I am surprised that you can do the binary math that fast, Mary.
I was.
You,
yeah.
You, remember, you
I
never.
Be, I used to be an air traffic controller.
Yes, you never cease to amaze me.
So, all right.
Did you use it? Binary and air traffic control?
Thank you. Yeah. I was thinking it, but I didn't want to put her on the screen.
Climb and maintain 110011 feet. No. All right. So anyway, let's catch up.
All right.
Can I go first?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
You were gone last week.
I was
so
gone last week, and yep, I spent the whole weekend with a bunch of magicians. So, and if you don't,
was it a convention?
Yes. If you don't think that's fun, you don't know what fun is.
Did you bring your PDF book with you?
My PDF book.
Of the magazine you used
magazine.
To
edit? Oh, it's not coming out in PDF. It is only hard copy. I refuse to put it out as electronic book. Because if somebody's going to...
Did you take pre-orders?
Yeah, I have already got... I'm only doing a run of 300 copies just to keep it small because it's a very niche book. And, yep, I sold probably about... let's see, between the pre-orders that I got... via email and that, I have probably about 40, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a pretty good amount.
Well, that'll pay for the production.
Yeah, the book, at the convention, the book is $75. Also, otherwise, it's $85, so people can email me wanting a copy. So, there you go. So, it'll be good.
Cool.
The only other thing I did this week is, actually a couple of things. There is, and Matt, I don't know if you'll be interested in this or not, but it's a KDE widget that I found and I downloaded and installed at home. Unfortunately, I can't get it to run on my BSD system, but what it is a little widget that monitors DistroWatch.
That's good.
It is so cool.
Do you know what I used to have?
What?
There used to be a plug-in. I forget what I was running when I used this, but it was an Abe Vigoda plugin, and it would have little Abe Vigoda's head down on your taskbar, and when you hovered over it, it would say, still alive. And then if he ever dies, when you hovered over it, it would say, dead now.
Who is that?
Abe Vigoda.
He's on some
Fish and Barney Miller and...
Yeah. So. I was unaware of that.
Because, like, he's old as dirt, and he's still going.
Yeah, still going after all these years. But anyway,
he's still going.
But this widget is available. If you go into the add widgets and then just go into the download portion and do DistroWatch or something like that, it'll show up, and then you can just install it. So I've got it on my desktop at home, and it just, every hour, I've set it to check every hour. So when I see something pop up there, I just know, oh, somebody must have posted a new one, and then I can go and take a look at it. So it's pretty slick. So, yeah, so I did that this week, and then took about 5 minutes to install. And the only other thing I did was I did install on this laptop that's running BSD, I did install EasyJail, which is a BSD jail management framework that's done at the command line. So I haven't really had a chance to play with
There's
it
no
more.
There's no graphical interface for it?
Not for Easy Jail, no. I mean, we're then talking
why,
core.
Then why is it called Easy Jail? I mean, if you're going to manage BSD jails at the command line, manage BSD jails at the command line.
Well, I think it's because it's just easy to do. It's probably the easier command line one. I don't know. They've got something called Warden, which...
Right, that's the standard.
Which is the standard
right.
PC BSD, but this is a free BSD tool. So anyway, so I installed that. I guess that's what I did this week. We're moving on.
Is Warden graphical?
Yeah, it's right here. I'll click it. and I've got one jail created. I installed Firefox in it, and I installed some other stuff, and I have to take
now with Pete, with BSD jails.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like
your mama's jail.
No, I can't remember what it's called in Linux, where you segregate out the things like that.
Containers.
They're not like Linux containers, are they? Where
I'm not familiar.
You can't run a whole operating system inside a jail, or can you run a whole operating system inside the jail?
Yeah,
because I know you can run applications inside a jail. You can put Firefox in a jail,
mm-hmm.
so that then if it gets compromised, it's only compromised in your jail.
Yeah, there's a whole file system in that jail, but what happens is that the jail shares the host kernel, so it's not a true virtualized system that's complete unto itself. And that's for efficiency. So that's one thing that I've learned as far as the jails that I've, with the JO, there's only been one that I've set up, but it's just something I'm still kind of learning when I got time. So, but I really like I love the concept actually, because you can just sandbox stuff. I think that's a great way to go, and it's really too bad that other operating systems really don't take
that. Well, there's that Linux distro that takes it to the extreme cubes. With the virtual machines.
Remember that? I reviewed that, cubes?
Yeah.
I think I reviewed 1.0, or was it 2.0? Anyway, I'm waiting for them to show up on DistroWatch again, because I'd like to take a look at them to see how they've come along. But that thing was extremely locked down, almost to the point for me of being kind of inefficient. But you knew you were pretty safe using it, so...
Yeah.
So that's what I did this week.
Except for the NSA backdoors.
Yeah. That could be. Oh, speaking of that, did you guys see the article? Somebody asked Linus Torvalds' father whether Linus had given permission to put a back door in there, or whether the NSA had approached him about that, and
I saw that somebody asked Linus that question.
Yes, but they asked his father. They asked his father about that this week, and he said that he was pretty sure that Linus did not consent to having that kind of thing put into Linux. And I did see the short YouTube clip of him basically saying no, but he was shaking his head yes, that they had contacted him way back when.
They did. Linus said they did.
Yeah. But he was saying, no, they never did. So he was going like that. So he was, and by that, for people who are listening via audio, I was shaking my head.
In the affirmative.
Affirmatively, but saying no. So apparently they had.
Hmm.
So I'm glad they didn't. Anyway, so... All right, so on to one of you guys.
Well, we go back to this magician thing.
Yeah.
Was that a conference you went to see? Or
it was.
Just
it was
a bunch of friends you used to hang out with?
I got some friends that are there. It was just basically...
what was it called?
It was called the Gathering of the New England Magi or something. I don't know.
Uh-huh. In D.C.?
No, it was in Connecticut.
Oh, that's right. Every year to connect.
Every year I go. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, there's card tricks and other kinds of magic, storytelling magic, haunted story magic, all sorts of crazy stuff. So it's a lot of fun.
I do a few card tricks.
Do you? All right. Do one for us, Matt.
If we have a deck of cards.
Yeah, we'll do that next week.
Next week I'll bring deck cards down.
It'll be an open source trick, because then you'll show us how it's done, right?
No.
Oh, okay. Just kidding. All right.
So. You know better than that, Mary.
I know. The magician's code. So.
All right.
All right, we'll catch up with somebody else here.
Matt?
Me? Well, we have at work, our main feed for the data center from DTE is down, so we're running on generator power. So
DTE is the power company?
Yes. So, we brought in, since we're using our backup generator, a backup generator for the backup generator.
Oh.
So that you have redundancy.
Yeah.
You've got to have redundancy.
Yeah.
So
you don't want it to run out of diesel fuel.
Well, that's different. If we just get diesel deliveries. They're scheduled to come. But anyway, the trailer's parked in the small parking lot behind our building. Okay. Big, huge, giant tractor trailer size, because it is a tractor trailer.
It's running.
Green generator, and it's not running, but although we did have the cops come yesterday.
Neighbors complaining about the song.
but too bad. We're commercially zoned, and we've got to run it. So
yeah.
Anyway, we've got another business next to us, a print shop, and the guy backed into the generator. and busted the back window out of his car.
Oh, no.
And he's like, well, you could have told me you put a generator there. And we're like, A, it's our parking lot. B, it's a gigantic green generator. If you don't see it, what the hell?
Yeah, yeah, aren't you supposed to look where you're driving?
Yeah.
It's not drive, but touch.
Just keep going till you hear the rattle of tin.
Right. Wow.
So, yeah. That's what.
All right. So hopefully you'll be back.
Hopefully when I get to work tonight, when I leave here, we'll be back on regular power.
Otherwise, you'll be hiring squirrels and feeding them.
No, our facilities guys are getting a little tired of it because one of them has to be there
24
hours because they have to, every half hour, check the generator.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You have to go down to the local BP and get diesel fuel. Just kidding.
It's right down the block, actually, but no.
All right.
All right.
Well, funny.
Well, this week was my son's first birthday, so we had a birthday party for him. It was a year ago then.
Did you invite us?
I did.
Did you?
Oh, but,
yeah.
I must have turned it down because I was gone, right?
Yeah, you said you wanted to come. And
I didn't even see it.
Did you not get on Facebook, or did I?
I don't go on Facebook.
Yeah. That's why. But anyways, that was Saturday, and I took a couple of days off from work to stay in with the kids and play and do things, and then I came back to work on Wednesday, mm-hmm. and it was very busy trying to get things done, and it was just, I was pulling my hair out. It was crazy.
Wow.
The last couple of days, just very busy. So hopefully tomorrow.
When you take time off like that, they don't put another guy at your hospital?
They do, but they're half inept.
Half inept. Well, at least
you're saying all of your coworkers are inept.
So at least they're half apt, though, right?
Right.
Okay.
No. There's some pretty good coworkers, but. They don't know the site as well as I do, and I guess I'm too nice to the people I support. They call me directly, so the people that don't, when they cover me, they don't answer my phone. So, but I always tell the people, you know, if I'm not here, you need to call in tickets. So you should just always call in tickets, because if I'm not here, then the person covering will pick it up. And I had to explain that a couple times this week. But other than that, it's alright. And
okay.
You know what I'm doing tomorrow night?
You know, you should make them open tickets all the time.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's a problem tracker.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I do. I mean, if it's a problem.
Because whoever manages your group, then.
Yeah, but no, you've got to justify your business.
Exactly.
Too.
Yeah. That's exactly right. They'll say, well, look, we've got. We have five staff members and only enough tickets for three, so we're going to lay two people off.
Yeah.
Well, I'm the only one at the site where I'm at.
Matt and I'll combine.
So I guess I'm just. It looks like I'm not as busy as I actually am, so you're right.
I think you need to
just be a little more vigilant on
making
Yeah, we don't want to. Yeah, we don't want you to get laid off or something.
No, really, it's you because it's all a numbers game today, and you've got to show that you're doing stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, you know you're busy, but the guy who's sitting in Troy looking at a spreadsheet doesn't see that you're busy.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, you know what I'm doing tomorrow night is I was invited to go on another podcast.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the Linux for the Rest of Us with Dor.
Yeah.
And so I'll be hanging out with him tomorrow night on 9:30 Eastern time on Google Hangouts.
Great. What are you going to talk about?
I have no clue. It's just chat. I don't know. Linux stuff.
Right. Linux talk.
Yeah.
Is Cody going to be there, or are you replacing
Cody? No, I'm sitting in for Cody, and it'll be Dor and I talking.
Very good.
Yeah, and I want to make one other comment that I realized that, the audio of the show from last week isn't our normal quality. I'm using Q-Tractor, and there's a different set of plugins to use for cleaning up the audio, and after an hour and a half of trying to sort through different ones, I kind of just, settled on what I had, and after listening to it after it was posted, I realized it wasn't quite as good as it should have been.
Now, why do you want to switch from Audacity to Q-Tractor? What's prompting this switch?
It's faster. Dor suggested, so I want to get in and see if the workflow is easier. And being it's a multi-track editor, which Audacity also is a multi-track editor. But Q-Tractor, you can switch filters back and forth fast. And as soon as you say enable, it's changed it so you can hear the difference. with Audacity, you have to say apply this filter, wait for it to apply it, and then listen to it and say, is that what I wanted? And then, oh no. So I have to say undo and then apply a different filter and, or a different setting in that filter.
But it sounds better.
It
seems to me it does, but
it didn't last week.
No, Audacity.
Yeah, yes. Audacity. It's because
you're used to it.
I figured out what we needed for Audacity.
So,
and I want to get it working on QTractor better. I think the overall workflow for getting it replicated and getting you guys to use it will be better. And I've changed a couple of the ways that if we go back to Audacity, I've written a couple of scripts that will make it easier, so we can use it in either Audacity or QTractor. The encoding of the files from WAV to MP3 mm-hmm. and OGG,
okay.
And it automatically tags it and everything. All you have mm-hmm. to do is punch in the episode number, and then it saves the files to the right file names and everything.
Sounds impressive to me.
Thanks. So,
all right.
Yeah.
So I guess we're going to move on then.
DOD dummy there has a excellent suggestion in the chat too about why you need to force them to put tickets in, because it also acts as a knowledge base. I have that at work. I keep a text file, and I got it on here so I could show you, but it's just a link of it's just a text file of the browser link to tickets, uh-huh. and it's called Tickets for Learning.
Yeah, and I understand that. The things, I don't know if we use a knowledge base section of...
The ticket itself acts as a knowledge base.
Yeah, it's...
Right. No, but you have to go back to Remedy and say what tickets were related to this to learn from...
Oh, I don't do that because I just keep a flat text file of my own.
Oh. Well, then you could just do that on anything you do. It doesn't have to be...
But they're not necessarily my tickets. Okay. There has to be a ticket for me to be able to do that, though. That's what I'm saying. That's what he is saying.
Yes, right. I understand that's what he's saying. I'm just saying I work for CareTech Solutions,
mm-hmm.
and CareTech does IT jobs or IT work for different hospitals. So I work at the Oakwood Health Systems, and we also do DNC and Garden City, and we have like a total of 20 different customers. So I'm sure CareTech Corporate probably does make a knowledge base and work off of that so the help desk can do it, but as in the field techs, we don't uh-huh. refer to that. So that's why I never thought about it.
So you reinvent the wheel every time a problem comes up?
No, we have our own documentation between the techs and everything.
Oh, yeah, we have a documentation too, but I still like to look at the tickets of others to see how they solve the problem.
Right. Yeah, and I understand. So I agree. I need to do that also. That's a good point.
All right. Good. What's next?
Our ticketing system is also our CMS.
Oh, okay.
And that's a problem we have is sometimes the sales guys don't use the ticketing system right. They just contact customers directly, and then that information is not part of that customer's file.
Oh, yeah.
That's not good. Okay.
All right. Well, I see we continue on.
All right.
I think we do.
So, Matt, what's going on in the kernel?
What's going on in the kernel? You know, that would probably help if I would have actually opened what was going on in the kernel.
Instead, you're going to just guess.
No, I'm
going to... there was a release.
Matt, while you're doing that, I want to pose a question to our audience. Mm-hmm. Do you guys like the sound bites that we use? Like the, hey, Matt, what's going on in the kernel this week?
We've gotten a lot of positive feedback on them.
Have we?
Yeah.
I remember at the very beginning we had some people, and then we just haven't really had word either way. It's just, that's one thing that in my audio editing process...
It's a lot of time consuming, isn't it?
It adds like an hour to my whole process. And I can probably have it done within a half hour, the entire show posted.
Or if you just drop those audio bites out?
Yeah, if I just left those out and we did the...
Because we got some listener feedback the other day on it, too. They really liked it.
We did.
Yeah, like last week or the week before, and I answered the guy and I said, yeah, he's that guy's a pro and he's related to Tony, and I don't know.
Oh.
So if you want any more information, if you need sound bites, you can contact Tony and he can put you in touch with him and yada yada.
Okay. I don't remember seeing that.
That's because Matt made it up.
No. It might have been on my G Plus or AG Plus feed, or it was somewhere.
Okay.
So
all right, well, obviously that's something to discuss later, I guess.
Yes.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
We have no release candidate again. The mainline is still 3.12, and our stable updates, on Wednesday, the 20th of November, 2013, at 12:40 Pacific Standard Time, Greg Kroharm released kernel 3.10.20, with 33 files changed, 427 lines inserted, and 103 lines deleted. And then on Wednesday, the 20th of November, 2013, at 12:41 Pacific Standard Time, Greg Kroharm released kernel 3.11.9, with 28 files changed, 366 lines inserted, and 92 lines deleted. And then on Wednesday, the 20th of November, 2013, at 12:42 Pacific Standard Time, Greg Kroharm released kernel 3.2.1. No, I'm sorry. Scratch that. It was 3.12.1.
I'm glad you clarified.
Yeah, because there is no 3.2.
There was at one time, wasn't there?
No.
Oh, okay.
With 22 files changed, 135 lines inserted, and 50 lines deleted, because the newest kernel is only 3.12.
I was just thinking myself, they haven't even incremented up to 2 yet.
Right.
So, okay.
There won't be a 3.2 either. If Linus has his way, he wants to go to the 4.0 kernel.
I remember seeing something about that. You talked about that,
yes,
too,
I did.
Yeah.
So, and then on Wednesday, the 20th of November, 2013, at 10:49 Pacific Standard Time, Greg Kroharm released kernel 3.4.7 with, that's got to be wrong. There is no 3.4 kernel. So.
Not yet, anyway.
And so I just copied and pasted that, so. With 13 files changed, 130 lines inserted, and 69 lines deleted.
So it's a mystery kernel?
I'm going to go find out right as soon as.
All right. Because, you know, I do enjoy this part of the show.
Yes. This week's kernel developer quote of the week comes from Linus Torvalds. I need eye bleach after going through my spam folder.
Oh, eye bleach.
That's funny.
That's hilarious. So, that's very funny.
And then under that, he posted a link to a Google search of baby otters.
All right. So, Matt, that's the kernel this week.
Yeah. Well, for now.
For now. We'll segue back to you a little bit later.
.org. There we go. Let's see what that kernel was that I messed up. Oh, no, right. That's not what I want. I want kernel.org.
Okay. And I guess, well, while Matt does that, we'll probably...
distribution.
Is that Evolution you got on your screen there, Tony?
It was, yeah.
I'm still getting used to us all having our screens on the same side of the table.
So we can see each other's screens?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to look back at the date. Last week's show was Thursday.
Okay.
And so the 15th is where we'll start with.
Speaking of that, while Matt does his little lookup, obviously I listened to the show and I listened to the interview with Dan from SourceForge, and I thought it was very interesting and informative, and I was very glad you guys set that up.
Yeah.
So I'll be absent more often so you can get good interviews in.
Actually, the Google Hangout worked out so well that we really don't, you don't need to be gone. I mean, it can be the three of us interviewing another person.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It does say 3.4. It's a long-term kernel, and it's supposedly 3.4.
All right.
Okay, well, I guess you were right.
And there's a 3.2. So I don't understand. My head hurts. Okay. And there's a 3.9, which is EOL. I think they've got their numbers wrong.
They may have left off something, like maybe a digit.
I don't know. It's confusing me, and my head hurts.
Okay. Well, then I guess we'll move on. We know you have to go to work after this podcast, so we don't want you to be hurt there. So I guess, well, now I know we had a lot of releases this week, didn't we?
Yeah,
so we're going to move on to...
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
All right, on the 15th, we're starting off with Web Converger 22.0. which is the latest version, stable version of the project's Debian-based distribution for internet kiosks.
They say for those wise people who are using the automatically upgrading install version, you should have received the benefits below. And then they list off a bunch of new stuff
there
in there. Yeah,
yeah. I went out to their site and I noted that. They said, as outlined in Avoiding the Microsoft Upgrade Treadmill, which apparently is a blog posting there on their site, they're keeping a conservative outlook on their, as far as on their releases, and they're working on a kernel update, so people who use Web Converger will not have to worry about this hardware issue, which apparently is a seizure-inducing array of colors It sounds like it's a graphic situation that probably isn't very good. But anyway, they do provide a command line mode for, you know, as a workaround to it. So that's good for them, I guess.
All right.
And I think it affects the 3.8 kernel, which is what they said, the 3.8 kernel. So, does it feel like probably, we're in the Twilight Zone or
I
something?
I wonder if it's 3.1.8.
I don't know. I don't know. My brain hurts. Let's just move on.
All right.
Because I have to sit next to him.
All right. So next we have, same, still on the 15th, it was Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
109, which is a small Debian-based live distribution designed for system administrators.
Yeah. And they upgraded the kernel to 3.10.
They did. You know, and I went out to their site, and Phoenix, they actually, they're one of the initial releases of Phoenix was created by using an existing Red Hat Linux distro. So they started off as Red Hat and then moved to Debian at some point in their life cycle there. They also use, and this is available on their site too, I did a little digging out there, but they also use something called Project NEIL, which stands for Normalized Extraction and Assembly of Live CD Environments. And this is what they use to build their live CD, and it really brings a lot of consistency to the build cycle, and just some minimal work, or at least less work than they would otherwise. And I think that's, they think that's pretty good.
Yeah, building process is so automated, you should have something like that to be consistent. I agree.
Yeah, so they touted that as part of their, features.
Cool.
All right, what do we have next?
Next up is Kweezy 1.4. Or is it Kweezy?
Squeezy.
I would say Queezy myself.
Just I would because say Queezy.
It's hilarious.
Yeah. And they are a mirror of Debian. No, this is a round of Miner.
I think this one is just Debian-based. More bug fix stuff for this Debian-based distro that runs, I believe, KDE.
Yeah, KDE Desktop. That's why it's Queezy.
Yeah. Because what does Debian use as their default? Is it, they didn't GNOME for a while, didn't they?
Yeah, it's been GNOME for a long time, and they're just talking about moving over to XFCE.
Okay.
Yeah, so it looks like they have made that change.
To XFCE?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because GNOME blows ass. But moving on.
No, it doesn't. GNOME 3.10? And GNOME is really looking pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah, the
and by looking pretty good, she really means blows ass. But moving
I
on.
Do not mean that. they've come a long way from the first releases. So anyway, what do we get up next, Tony?
Next we have Antergos 2013.11.17.
Antergos.
Antergos?
Yeah.
Antergos.
Antergos.
Okay, that's what I thought you said.
Let's say hello again now.
They're Arch-based. And they are running GNOME 3.
They are. And I'll tell you what, I took a look. Actually, I downloaded them because I wanted to, and it was going to take 5 hours to download it, and I just started this morning. So I forgot to check and see if it was done at the end of my day.
5 hours?
Well, you know, it's just, I think it's really metered, probably just low bandwidth or whatever. But they have completely revamped their Synchy installer. And based on the screenshots I saw, I was very impressed with it. I mean, we're talking some really attractive-looking install screens with some sliders that allows you to really select. I can remember before where it was more of an ncurses base, and you still had a lot of flexibility as far as what you chose for your system when you installed it. But this one is, they've really done a nice job. So I downloaded it. I'm going to take a look at it and I'll report back next week. It's pretty impressive.
Cool.
From what I could tell. Yep. So.
Right. Yeah, next up on our list is released on the 19th was Emubuntus, which is version number 12.04.3-1.06.
Zero? No.
They put the date in there and it's for something. What is it? Oh no, they got
before.
It's got so they've it's, got it's the got, they've got the Ubuntu number and then their own number plastered on the end.
Yeah, yeah, it's based on Zubuntu, and it's designed for refurbished computers designed for humanitarian organizations.
Yeah, their website, what they indicated, as far as to ensure the proper installation of Emubuntu's too, We advise you to first install without internet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then get online and the first reboot to complete your install. So apparently they don't want you connected to any external systems or whatever. Just put it on there, and then once it's on there, then you go ahead and take care of the rest of it. So
there must be some kind of script that goes through and sets up some programs.
It must be. Where, they don't want it to get...
Yeah, because the default Ubuntu install allows it to download all the updates as you're installing, and so your first reboot is up to date or something close to it.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. All right. The next one we have is Network Security Toolkit 18-5413, which is also known as the NST.
For Network Security Toolkit.
That's right.
It used to be NSA. No.
I've used that too, but
yeah, it's Fedora based. Did you know that?
I did, but I don't care for it. So I have another one that I use.
Oh, okay. Well, they said according to what they said here, and unfortunately you don't like it, Matt. So I'm going to talk to Tony about this. they said you can just simply do a yum update to get the new system down. One thing they noted too, as far as some new things that are part of this release, is that they've got something called the WUI, WUI, which allows you to convert files to different formats. And they said that, for example, if you want to convert from PostScript to PDF, if you want to download a URL and render it to a PDF, convert ASCII source code files to colorized HTML, this tool will allow you to do it. So they've kind of added this capability into it. So kind of interesting, I guess. I've never used it, but just wanted to pass that information along.
All right.
Well, moving right along.
I have something similar to that. You can do that with Chrome. So that's what I use.
Oh, okay.
Instead of, you say print, and then you can choose the PDF, save as PDF instead.
Okay.
But, all right. So next up we have...
Did you know what I learned this week, too?
What does the chameleon say?
No. That was hilarious. I sent that link to a guy at work who's a big SUSE guy.
Oh, yeah. So,
is that the link that I put out there?
No, way before you did.
That's it.
Okay, I was late.
but no, you can send a file to a printer with Netcat.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Really?
Yes. Hmm. So one of the guys at work is going to Wayne State.
Yeah,
and he's going to check and see if
he can.
No, he's going to check and see if he can do it on campus to avoid their pay to print system.
That's as bad as me trying to SSH into my home server to go out on the web and avoid Verizon. Well, I can't even use Verizon.
Right.
When I go to football games, so it's pretty funny. I did post that, because SUSE, and I think we're getting to them pretty soon.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
They had a very voluminous set of release notes, and I remember a couple of releases ago. I think it coincided about the same time that the Pope was being elected, and they had the little smoke thing, but their smoke was green.
Yes,
that's hilarious. But at the very bottom of the release notes, when I looked at them this week, they had that "What does the chameleon say?" So I thought it was new, and of course. I didn't fully appreciate the whole Fox thing. I'd heard it, but I never heard the song.
Oh.
So then the chameleon thing I thought was hilarious. Then I thought, okay, I got to go out and find the Fox thing, and found that. And I thought,
You're not too far behind. I think I heard it about a week ago.
Yeah.
It's been around though for a few months.
With the Fox, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, what the Fox says.
What does the Fox say?
Yeah, anyway.
I turned the guys on at work to it. I was the first one at work. What stands out about SUSE? What makes SUSE a very unique distribution?
That the Android devices integration with the KDE file manager in the shell and music player.
No.
That doesn't do it?
No.
They're
even more unique than that.
Their mascot's not a
thing. No.
They're derived originally from Slackware?
They are. But what does that mean?
That means they're for serious people only?
No, that they're the only RPM distribution not based on Red Hat.
Oh, wow, what a great trivial question.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because they started out as Slackware-based, and then when Red Hat came out with the RPMs, they were like, wow, that's a really cool thing. Let's switch to using RPMs, but they didn't. They're not based on Red Hat. They just use RPMs.
Oh.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't think about that.
I never would have thought about that.
Yeah. Well, and the whole reason we're talking about OpenSUSE is because they had a release this week.
Yes, they did.
Right, they
on,
did.
On the 19th, OpenSUSE 13.1.
Yeah, what did the chameleon say?
Ow!
My favorite part is if it wants to communicate with a friendly penguin.
Yeah.
Open source.
Yep.
Oh, good. Funny.
Yeah, so I'll have that, a link to that in the show notes. Or I bet every other Linux guy on Google Plus has posted it too.
Yeah. So. It's all over.
Anyway, so that was released. Very cool. Was there anything else about the SUSE release notes that you found out, Mary?
Yes. Actually, well, aside from them being very voluminous, this particular release includes LibreOffice 4.1, and they're using the 3.11 kernel.
Old stuff.
Well, and I mentioned, although it was during Matt's, the chameleon say, segment, that desktop users, they're gonna enjoy the Android devices integration with the KDE file manager. They put that into this release, so they've, I think, made it easier to use your Android device with your Linux desktop.
So it was when you plug in your phone to your laptop or your desktop, then it comes up as an icon on there. Is that what that means?
I believe that's what it is.
You're gonna be able to use Android apps. I think, isn't it?
No, device integration.
I think it's device integration. I don't think you're going to, well, I mean.
Because that sounds kind of something I've been doing on Ubuntu for a long time.
Yeah.
That just comes up as a USB.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's a developer thing and you can mount the file system on your computer. We'll have to look into that.
Are you taking notes, Matt?
No, I'm not.
All right, well, I know I got to do that. In Turgos, take a look at their installer. We got to take a look at this. We're building next week's show.
There you go.
All right, what's next?
All right, Univention Corporate Server 3.2, which is Debian-based, and it's enterprise-class operating system for servers. That was released on the 19th also.
Yeah, their website is very professionally produced because they're a company apparently, and they've got a couple things they've done. Their management council, they've got now what's called a single sign-on, so that once you sign on to one, it allows you access to any other UMC instances. They also have what's called a NAP center, and that offers a greater integration possibilities for third-party apps and some of the other components that they've got. So
is that part of the web interface?
I'm not sure because I have not installed this myself.
Yeah.
But based on what I saw, it looked. I think anybody who uses it would probably be pretty happy with it. But they've got you can download 32-bit and 64-bit versions of it. Virtual machine images for VMware and VirtualBox and Amazon machine images, which I was, for some reason, I
AWS?
No, AMI.
AMI, that's not
it.
Image, not storage.
Yes. Yeah, Amazon machine image.
Yeah.
That's what I said. What'd you say?
I know. AWS. Brain cramp. Sorry.
Just having fun with it, man.
I know.
All right.
They're German. Anyway. Did you know that?
Yes. Yes, I did know that. That's on Amazon's EC2. So anyway, so those have been upgraded to the latest version also.
All right.
Yeah. So isn't that a nice looking website?
It is. It looks like WordPress.
I saw an article, how to install WordPress from the command line. Tony, I thought of you.
Doesn't that look WordPress?
All my WordPress instances I do from command line.
Do you really?
Yeah, because I have to SSH into the server to get it set up.
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
It's actually not that hard. You download a zip file, you uncompress it.
Yeah.
And you change your file permission on your and then you go to the web interface.
Yeah, I've done that
say
myself.
Install.
Oh, I'm no longer impressed. Oh, I've done it myself. And I'm probably the one that uses the command line the least of the three of us.
Yeah.
Doesn't that look WordPressy though?
I don't know. I like the theme if it is. All right, so what's our next distro? Is that the anything more?
Oh, I just we have two more.
Oh, I know which one's coming up next. Away.
Yeah, Drinky Linux.
Yes.
13.0.
Yes.
You know, you're talking about Amazon services, web services. The first time I saw a turnkey was on Amazon.
Is it the one I did, or something?
No,
somebody else.
It was like 3 years ago when I was setting up a server for the lug. And I was messing with different instances that we can run, and
Was that when we used to do that Amazon instance and fire it up during the meetings to run the audio
video conferencing?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay. Well, I use Amazon and Turnkey. Well, what you do is you create an account in Turnkey Hub, and then it kind of connects back to Amazon, and you can then run whatever they've got. Right. You can run it.
Cool.
And although I have to say, though, I had gotten a warning from somebody about it. Was almost as if I was spamming or something. It was the impression I got. Now, it wasn't spam, but it was like it was an insecure instance. And of course, I had only fired up to play around with it a little bit. So when I got this letter from Amazon, this email, I thought, I think I'm just going to take that thing right offline. And
was it about mail? Did you accidentally set up an open relay?
No, it wasn't email per se, but I mean, it kind of reminded me of that kind of thing where, you know, it's like a, not a cease and desist, but it was, something was going on with that thing, and I thought, well, maybe it had gotten compromised, because I had it up for a couple of days, and, you know, those evil
they find you pretty quick.
There, yeah, so, but anyway, so I took it down, and, but it was kind of cool. I mean, just the whole idea of having those things instantly, you know, they're built and available for you right away.
Yeah, I agree. It's very cool.
And you can set them up to get automatic security updates. So I think that would take care of any of the problem.
Right.
So,
yeah, I agree. All right. And the last one on our list.
Oh,
there it is.
The mother of all distros.
It's Red Hat Enterprise Linux 6.5.
Yeah, we'll be upgrading probably next year.
Yeah.
I mean, CentOS isn't too far behind.
No, but we've got to test it.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. You just don't.
No.
Give it a whirl.
Just don't run it into production.
All right. So, well, that'll be good. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to take a look and see what else is going on with that release, but, you know, obviously Red Hat's a great company, so I'm sure it's fantastic.
Yeah, Red Hat has good stuff coming out.
Okay.
Yeah, they write really great documentation.
Yeah.
We'll be getting to that later.
Yeah.
Yes, we will.
All right. So let's go on to not the top five.
Not the top five.
We're going to take it. Yeah, we're taking a different
path.
Taking a detour this week.
A slight hiatus from DistroWatch. And we're
and
going
trending
over.
Up. Oh, wait. All right.
And I found this article from Effie Times, and it says the top 12 distros and their uses.
Now, how did they mention this, Tony? Was that information provided to you?
Yeah, right in the first first paragraph in the thing, it says,
okay.
While you may argue with the list is not complete, but we have tried to bring you some of the key Linux distros that's not in it.
Okay.
Wait, am I reading that wrong?
I don't know.
It's pretty small font, and you're pretty that far is. Away from it.
Anyway, so it's some of the more... there's some of these that I had never heard of.
Like what?
Like Kali Linux.
Kali?
Oh, maybe we've heard
Kali,
of
it. Didn't they have that? It used to be Backtrack. It used to be something else.
No, it used to be Backtrack.
Yeah, Kali is... I think it's an Indian... from Indian mythology is like this... goddess of
it's the dragon
destruction
things. they changed the name. I don't know why they changed the name,
so
but they kept the logo the same.
They just changed it last year.
They kept the dragon logo the same because it worked with
They changed it last year or something. So
all right, then that was number 12.
Okay.
And number 11 is Arch Linux. Number 10 is Damn Vulnerable Linux. No, I haven't heard of that one.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I have too.
That's the one
I've used it.
Have you?
Yeah.
How is it?
No, it's too easy. You can compromise that sucker in about 30 seconds.
Wow. Number 9 is Gentoo.
All right, Gentoo.
Yeah.
The distro for guys with too much time on their hands.
Number 8 is Red Hat Linux. which we just talked about, the enterprise level.
This list is in terms of what, usage?
It's just, it's just things that they decided to put in there.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, because it can't be usage, because the Red Hat will be much, much higher.
That's what I would think.
It's you nice. Don't think there's more CentOS instances than Red Hat?
I don't know.
Yeah, but his number 7 is CentOS.
But it would be Red Hat would be above so Ubuntu, I believe.
You think so?
I don't. Maybe in the enterprise.
Yeah, enterprise.
That's where all the that's where all the installations are. Linux right. on the desktop is minimal,
yeah.
insignificant numbers. So the vast majority of your installations are going to be Red Hat or Red Hat based.
Okay.
Distribution.
And that's going to actually play a role in one of my news articles.
All right. Number 6 is OpenSUSE. Which is KDE for the desktop. Number 5 is Puppy Linux. Number 4 is Debian. Number 3 is Fedora. But number 2 is Linux Mint. And number 1 is Ubuntu.
I think this list was just written by biased people with their opinions.
Did you set him up?
No, seriously, that's the only way you can arrive at this numbering system.
Let me
explain. It's the author's personal bias.
Let me explain the appropriateness of Ubuntu being at number one. If you were to take...
The only reason for Ubuntu to be at number one is because the author, any numbering system is not going to have Ubuntu at number one.
I've heard a lot of numbering systems put Ubuntu as number one.
That's because they're biased.
No, it's not because they're biased. It's because what you have to do is you have to look at it synergistically.
If you do it strictly on number of installations, it's not going to be Ubuntu.
Installations of what?
Software.
Well, I'm looking at it this way. There, Ubuntu is the basis for almost 100 other distros.
What happened?
And I don't know, Matt.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know. I clicked something by accident.
And I don't have a back button. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, did you go to full or something? Or why'd you hit F12?
I don't know.
Or F11 or something. See if it.
Oh, I got this infographic.
I bet you turned off your menus. What's your browser? What browser are you using?
This is Opera.
Okay. Anyway, but my point in saying the appropriateness of Ubuntu at number one is simply because there are so many other distros that use Ubuntu as their basis. They're derived from Ubuntu, so it just makes sense that they'd be there at number one.
No.
I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, well, you're applying for that.
I do have a problem with the fact that I don't have any more beer.
That's because you're applying for that. You're just sweet-talking because you're applying for that new project
manager. Oh, that project manager job, I saw that. I thought, oh, you can work it. I think you can work at home, can't you?
Yeah, travel. It does. It said home base.
Yeah. Ooh.
Sounds like a perfect thing for you.
It does, doesn't it? All right, so anyway, so Tony, that's the end of your list?
I'm looking at Google Trends, and I said compare Ubuntu, Red Hat, SUSE, and Arch. And Ubuntu is like off the chart.
Compared to others.
Yeah, compared to everything else.
Well, the talk about them, yeah.
Yeah.
The buzz on the net is going to be huger.
Huger?
So, yeah, but it's not installations. It's not. There is way, 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 way more machines running Red Hat and Red Hat-based distros than anything else. Ever in the universe.
I disagree.
I'll believe you when we find some numbers that can show that.
Oh, if you're going to talk about it.
Okay.
I'm glad I'm sitting between you. All right, so anyway,
and we're talking about overall. We're not talking about the difference between servers and desktops. And
yes, because there are way more servers than there are consumer PCs running Linux. I mean, there's 2,500 at my work alone.
I'll tell you what, I think
they're running CentOS,
which is a Red Hat based distribution.
Well, so it's not Red Hat.
They're not, Tony. You're so wrong.
So if you're going to use CentOS as part of Red Hat, then we should be able to use.
You can use them all. You can throw Mint everything in there, and Red Hat is going to kick its ass.
All right. Well, actually, while you do that, that's a great segue because.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
This past week, they released the November 2013 top 500 supercomputer list. Did you guys see that?
Top 500 list of supercomputers?
Yeah, the fastest.
You know, they're changing that. They're changing the way they're ranked. They're not going to use the same benchmark anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was unaware of that. What are they going to use?
I forget.
they haven't said what they're going to use. They just said that they're not going to use that anymore. Because it, people, you can tweak it so that it does really well on the benchmark, but then doesn't perform very well in real life situations.
Oh, okay. Well, that certainly makes sense. So you're saying that the 480-some Linux computers on there may not... or are you saying that the two Windows computers that were on there may not make it next
year?
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
But anyway, I while you're looking at that, that was one of my news items I wanted to cover. And it was really quite an interesting list. And, I'm going to have a link to the actual site that does this, because you can click down into the various sections and find out, for example, in the top 10, they really, aside from the Cray, I think, Linux environment that they say, they really don't identify what Linux... maybe it's a customized, what Linux distribution they're using, until you hit number 11, and they say it's SUSE Linux Enterprise Server 11. First instance of Red Hat you don't find until you hit 18, which is Red Hat Enterprise Linux 6.
Yeah, because most of the time it's a custom tape distribution.
That's kind of what I was thinking, because it just said Linux, and I didn't really get into specifics. But CentOS is on the list, but this link that I'm going to include in the show notes is really nice, because you can drop down if you want to see how many CentOS's or how many Red Hats or whatever. You can do that by distro. I mentioned there were two Windows systems on there. One was at 237, which is called the Magic Cube, and that's running Windows HPC 2008. That must be High Performance Computing Server 2008. Mm. And then there was another one at 309 called Microsoft Windows Azure, and that's here in the U.S. And so it's so anyway, but I thought it was kind of interesting to see this. And, of course, no surprise as far as who was up near the top. So there you have it. So do you got your info, Matt?
No, I'm still... I'm trying to find the I forget the company that did it. Mm-hmm. I think it was it's StatCounter that does it. And okay. NetMarketShare does it also. They do it by browsers, browser-based information.
Okay. So are you...
I'm still searching.
You're still searching?
Yes, go on.
Great, why don't I go ahead with my next little news snippet.
Is that another beer to continue with the news?
No, I probably shouldn't do that, because I have to go driving around that, and I have to drive.
Oh.
So we won't do that. But this one is from the Third Time's the Charm Navy Department. We have this morsel involving Sputnik. Not the throwback Russian space satellite, but Dell's Linux developer offering, because they are on... I think it's version 3 of the Sputnik laptop that Dell is made available for developers. So it's the XPS 13 Developer Edition, and they've codenamed it now Sputnik 3. And this particular Ultrabook is going to follow the second model that was launched earlier this year that fixed monitor resolution problems. And apparently this is going to have a touch-enabled monitor, so... I don't know if that's going to be good or not good, but you'll be able to interact with your laptop monitor by touching it. Yeah, I know I've got that Asus Transformer, and I've got a keyboard that I can slip it into.
Yeah,
and so I've got the ability to do that, which is kind of nice. But then I have to deal with the limitations of Android when I'm trying to do something high end as far as graphic editing and that type of thing. So
right.
So, but they're saying that the starting price of this new Sputnik 3 is going to be $1,249, and it will range between that and then $1,549. So you can get, of course, they're going with the long-term Linux support version 1204, and you can get it in either 32-bit or 64-bit. So, but anyway, it sounds
just
pretty
wrong.
Good.
They have SUSE at number 1 and FreeBSD at number 2.
I like that one. Me and my little BSD system here. So anyway, so there's that news item that I think neither one of you heard.
I was listening to it.
Hey, yeah.
Actually, I saw that same article.
Did you?
I know they came out with Sputnik about a year ago.
Yeah, it was about a year ago.
And there was a lot of people saying they wanted to run on their computer. They wanted to buy it.
Yep.
But it was really expensive because it's a high-end computer.
Yeah.
So that's kind of one of the flaws of how
Dell has done
some,
it.
Some open source people think that computers should be free or inexpensive. where if you want a high-end computer, you're going to have to shell out some money to get it.
Yeah, and the XPS, remember I had that little Dell XPS 13-inch, that one that had the, it was black with the little kind of silver gray stripes on it. Yep, that was an XPS series, and I got that from Dell, and it came with Linux installed, actually Ubuntu. Now, here's my question, because these computers are, they're sold with Linux by default on them, so I'm assuming that the secure boot feature has been turned off or disabled, or because isn't that strictly for Microsoft? Or
I don't think they've come to the point of requiring that yet.
Okay.
There's one option in there too. You can still have secure boot, but it's whether you're gonna require one point of it. No, I can't remember because it's been a year and a half since we did a lot of that work on it.
Yeah. All right. How you doing over there, Matt?
Can't find it.
Do you want me to go to KDE Corner now?
Yeah, go to KDE Corner now.
All right.
Well, you know, I have one article I want to talk about. I have another one if you don't mind talking a little bit about it.
No.
The next big thing in real-time communication. Have you ever heard of WebRTC?
Yes.
Well, that's web real-time communication.
Yes.
What is it? Tell us, Tony.
It's
I think I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it.
It's a web framework that is being built into a lot of the new browsers that you can do real-time video conferencing and
right in your browser with HTML. It uses HTML5.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
really?
They haven't set on a standard yet, though. I talked about this last week. No, the week before last.
Did you?
Yeah, because they're Cisco's going
to
open source the H.264.
I remember you talking about that.
Because they want to get the they want to become the standard.
So, that would be good. So when is that going to be available? Did the article say that?
It's available right now, and it just depends
on when
they decide to.
Is it kind of rudimentary, or is it more developed? Or?
No, it's actually pretty good. You know, a lot of people are moving to it now. Being the framework, it's built into HTML5, like Matt said.
Yeah.
And so this article I found, which my webpage is freaking out on me, I can't go to it right now. Anyway.
Is that your command line install WordPress?
Yes, it is.
Just kidding. All right.
Huh.
And speaking of web stuff, you know, that browser-based slide tool that you talked about weeks ago.
Yeah.
I played around
with JS.
Yeah, I played around with that a little bit. It's really kind of cool. I'd like to dig in and be able to do some real fancy stuff with it, but I got to... A little bit of a little teeny learning curve I'll have to kind of get familiar with, but I really liked it, just the basics when I played around with that a few weeks last week.
Yeah. You know, Matt, the hard thing with looking for stats like this is to find current stats.
Yeah, I know. I found some from 2009.
I found an article from 2008, populated across the globe. And it'll say like...
Handrake?
Like what areas, just Linux in general.
Right.
And then where, like, Ubuntu is most popular in Italy and Cuba, or OpenSUSE is most popular in Russia and the Czech Republic.
That's before ROSA.
This is 2008.
Speaking of Cuba, this is not Linux related. I heard it on the way over here. The latest, like, conspiracy theory about the JFK assassination.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Is that the Soviets did it because JFK, this is true now. This is all coming out recently to new light. He was in secret negotiations with Castro in Cuba to make friendlier ties with Cuba.
Oh, really?
Oh.
And when he was assassinated, that all came to a screeching halt.
Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway. And you knew that the limo he was riding in is in the museum here in Dearborn.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's in the Henry Ford.
Yeah. No. All right. Well, back onto the show. So what else? You got another news story for us?
I got to get back on our website, so.
Okay.
You can go to the KDE Corner.
All right. I got a couple things, actually. I talked about that really cool DistroWatch widget that I installed on my home workstation, which works really well. There's also, now, people who've heard me do the distro reviews know I'm left-handed, and I prefer to use a left-handed mouse, but I found a widget that just... You click it and it switches the button for you. You don't have to go into system settings and into input devices. And this is, of course, in a KDE environment. You just simply have to install this widget, click the button, and it will switch it for you. That's the good news. And it works well on my home workstation. The bad news is on my laptop, which is running PCBSD right now and KDE, there are a few widgets that will not install. Uh-huh. And I don't know why that is. I probably should do a little bit of investigating and research as to why it is. But that one was one of them, and I was a little disappointed because on my laptop is really where if somebody's going to use it, I always like to turn it into a right-handed laptop for them. And it's just a great little button to press, and that's it.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's convenient if you're going to be switching between people. And
yeah.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, then a couple of other things from the KDE world. Recon 2.4 was released this past week, so I've got a little link to that in the show notes. For those of you who use it, I don't use it that much, but
is,
you know.
Is Recon, is that like the redone Conqueror?
Yeah, yeah, okay. It is. It's just an awful name. We should change that name.
Yeah.
And then there's another one. This is a link to enable you to help shape the future of managing network connections in KDE. Mm. And this is the graphical applet that you use. You've got an opportunity to weigh in on how you want that to look. And so they have some really nice screenshots of this already. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes for anyone who is interested. That's one thing that I've spent some time using is the network connection manager, especially because I'm moving around and in different places and using different wireless networks. So, but that's my news this week.
All right, very cool.
You got any news, Matt?
Just wanted to talk about
what was number one.
No.
Did you find it yet?
It's impossible to drill that number down, but in my gut, I know I'm right, but we'll have to call it.
I'm sure I can find it.
You can't find it. You can't. Those numbers don't exist. But anyway, well, pre-installed, it'll tell you pre-installed, but like all the machines we buy from Dell, we buy with no OS and they install something right on them. So
yeah, you
find numbers for pre-installed.
A lot of the installs, you don't want people to know what's on it, or you don't want to advertise. I mean, or people that are security running, they don't want to advertise the version of numbering of whatever they're running.
Oh, yeah.
So I agree, it's hard to pin down numbers with that.
Yeah.
But it's obviously Red Hat and Red Hat based distros. Anyway.
Can you get that last word in there? All right.
Anyway, what I want to talk about is Oracle has a whole big section of their website dedicated to documentation for Oracle Linux.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah.
Isn't it nice? I'm always really big on documentation. So, Matt,
yeah, it's really good documentation,
what's your
too.
Take on it,
and Matt? Then when you click on it and open this documentation, it says Red Hat right on it. They just took the Red Hat docs and put them on their website as documentation for Oracle Linux.
Nice.
Come on, Oracle.
Billions and billions of dollars this company has, and they can't even rewrite. Just copy and paste it and put your own logo on there. I mean, come on.
Wow.
But, yeah, it was kind of, I laughed pretty hard.
Huh. I wonder what they charge for licensing.
They don't sell licensing. Their distro is completely free, as opposed to Red Hat, where you have to download the source and compile it if you want to.
Oh, okay.
But Oracle Linux you can get completely for free, like CentOS, because it's a Red Hat clone.
Oh, and then you pay for the support.
Right.
Okay. So, Red Hat, you pay for the software and you pay for the support?
You can only get the software with a support package.
I see.
Right.
Okay.
So, if you pay for one instance of Red Hat and the support, can you run multiple instances then without the... Because there's no license on how many servers you can run with Red Hat, right?
I don't know.
Support the one that you...
I don't know. That's an excellent question. And I'll research that and have an answer next week.
Very cool.
No, I will, because I'm curious. That one really interests me, whether you can do that.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, good. I guess, does that conclude our news segment?
Sure.
Got it?
Sure. I think so.
All right. Yeah, I don't have any. I talked about my little news stuff.
You have one more article. It's more security-based stuff.
Yeah.
So I put it under my security section.
Oh, yeah. Our new security section.
That's yeah. Right. But it says GitHub under heavy attack.
When is this today?
The article's from 2 days ago.
Okay.
But GitHub, it's under attack as of like the actual hackers trying to crack passwords and.
Okay.
They said their number of failed login attempts have jumped dramatically. And they attributed it to the Adobe's leak of those password files.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
We have that happen all the time, especially when a new vulnerability comes out in WordPress.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll get servers that just get hammered. It's just, you know, it's login, register, and login. Like, if you tail the HTTP log file,
yeah,
it's mm-hmm. just, you know, boom, 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 boom. I had to do it last night. I had to go in and block 3 IPs on this one cluster because they were just hammering it, trying to break in.
Oh, where were those IPs originating from?
I don't know. I didn't look.
Mm, okay.
Hmm. Cool. Anyway, so that was my my article about that.
Yeah, but I guess I'm not surprised.
Right. All right. So what's up next?
I don't know. Did we talk about last week? I mean, just the... The interview and all
yeah, that. A little bit about it at the beginning of the show.
I was just thinking, when you said GitHub, I just thought, SourceForge.
Right.
So that was...
Yeah, and that's what really came to mind is when they were talking about, you know, getting hammered on GitHub, you know, was that related to the one thing or the other? Mm. So that's where I wanted to go in and look.
Yep, it's a good question. All right. And I guess next we would normally have Is It Alive, but... I was out in Connecticut, so I don't have it this week, unfortunately.
No.
So we'll have to have a special for those of you who are, of course, in the U.S. We know that next week is Thanksgiving, so we'll have to have a special one, although it'll probably air after Thanksgiving. We'll have a Thanksgiving weekend version.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we're going to we're going to be recording on Wednesday next week.
Next Wednesday, yep.
Yep. So if you want to catch us live. Look for us on Wednesday at the same time, 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I did this week is I'm doing a little bit of training at work on Unix command line stuff.
Okay.
And just some of the basic
LS, MV, CP.
Yeah.
He's getting it down.
MKDR.
Yeah, no, but that was all in there. And I'm like, yeah. But what was interesting is... there's a whole like community around dot files. Have you ever heard the phrase dot files?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's how you hide a file and
yeah, right. And that's where like the original comes from. But the community part, what they're referring to is your config files for your dot bash RC and your dot profile and your and then so if you go to GitHub that this person suggests to go look. There are over 2,000 people that have put on GitHub, put their .dot files, and you can download them, and you check out what they're running for aliases and what their little scripts and stuff are included. And within the .dot files, there's a folder for bin, which is all their scripts that they have also. So it's interesting to see what people are putting together for themselves.
We do that at work. You can build your own custom dot files and aliases and everything, and then you can push them out with Puppet. So it's every time you log into a server, you've got your aliases and your scripts that you run all the time.
Yeah, that's nice. And so what I'm doing is I'm syncing mine to OwnCloud, and then I have all my computers sync the OwnCloud all my .dot files back, so that whenever I change aliases on one computer, the rest of them get it too.
Ah, that's pretty slick.
Yeah, you can do the same thing with Dropbox or whatever. Any,
that is a very any slick file idea.
Yeah.
And the key is though,
poor man's puppet.
you symlink your .dot bash RC file into this folder where all your .dot files.
Right.
Yeah.
And within the .dot bash RC, you can tell it to load other files. So instead of having all your aliases right in .dot bash RC, you can have that separated out.
Do you know what the difference between the bash RC and the .dot profile is?
Yes. Bash RC is only run when you run a terminal. When profiles, or no, it's when you run a script uses .dot RC, but .dot profiles is only run when you log in as a human.
You're close.
When you log in as something else.
No, you're close.
Yeah, because if
you're close.
Script,
dot still uses profile. Dot profile is invoked anytime from a login. So anytime you have to password authenticate to open the shell, it references your dot profile. Anytime you don't have to log in, i.e. open a terminal in a graphical environment, because there the terminal just opens, it invokes your bash RC.
Oh. All right.
Hmm.
I didn't think about the difference between those two.
Yeah because they're different.
Okay. And although what I did find is if you, because you can reference within your dot profile, you can also have a pull other for reference.
Well, that's what most of the time in the dot profile, there's a link to reference the bash RC.
Yeah.
So
I tried that anyway. And it created an infinite loop. And my
because you went back to your profile.
I looked through my bash. I didn't see it
in your RC
calling. Yeah, I didn't see it calling the dot profile. So I don't know if Mint is or Ubuntu is doing something different between that. The two, or maybe it's because I'm running.
You know where you've got to look. You got to look in the global files.
Okay.
You put it in your dot profile, right?
Yeah.
Look at the global dot profile, and it might already be referencing the global dot profile.
I think that's what it is. Yeah. So it started. It did an infinite loop.
Right.
Hung. So I had to kill it and change that file and or comment out that one line, and then it fixed it. And the other thing I found out is in the .ssh folder, the only thing I've used it in the past is you can, it holds all of your known hosts.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a config file in there also.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you can SSH, like the command would be SSH and then the friendly name that's within that thing. And so it doesn't have to be a host file. And you can specify usernames, you can specify the port. So I can say SSH, you know, web host, like that's my web host.
Right, and put the alias to your web host in the config file, the personal config file.
Right, yeah, and so it goes through and it will connect and it tells what port it is and the username to connect with, and that's very cool. So I wrote a little script that grabs, if I say SSH FSM, so I'm making an SSH FS mount, that it grabs the first option that I add in there, which is the SSH, it will be the SSH name. It creates the folder to mount to. It grabs the SSH config file info there, mounts it, and then it's all ready. So all I do is SSH FSM and then like BMUS, and it'll mount my home computer and everything right there. I don't have to type out the whole list of command. So I just, that's a little trick that I put together this week. I thought it was cool.
Is that our tooltip?
It can be.
Oh, no. One other thing I found with this. This is the last one we can talk about. But you've used bang bang to repeat the last command. So if you do sudo bang bang, mm-hmm. It repeats last command as super user. Well, if you do sudo bang dollar sign, it'll... Not sudo, but you do it by command, which say you create a folder and it's four folders deep. And so it'll be like mkdir and then folder 1, folder 2, folder 3, folder 4, or whatever. And then you hit enter and it creates that folder structure. Now you want to cd into that last folder. You do cd bang dollar sign and hit enter, and then it puts you right into that last folder because it grabs the last...
the last input.
Input, right. Of the previous line.
Mm-hmm. Of the previous command.
Which is very cool. I never knew that. And I've used that a couple times this week. Instead of having to type up the entire path again, I can say just use that last one I used from previous.
Okay.
Yeah. Or what I do is I just up arrow and then hit home, which takes me to the front, delete the initial command, and cd.
But I do it in 5 strokes, keystrokes.
Can you do it?
I do it 1, 2, and then however you get make dir 4, so that's, you know.
And then
it's almost the 6. Same. Yeah, it's almost the same. Almost the same.
Tony, you think yours is a little faster.
But you know, it's pretty cool. And then, I don't know. So there was just a lot of little things that I didn't think like the intro and the command line would have given me any real information, but it's little things like that I didn't know.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. Good.
That's like when you're writing an alias too. If you want to be able to pass an argument to it, you do like
$1, like, $2.
Yeah, you put a $1 at the end of it, and that way when you then do your alias, your shorter version, and then you put an argument, the $1 goes out and grabs that first argument that you put in there.
Yeah, and that's what I did. That's how I did the
SSH. Is that an array?
No.
Oh, okay.
Is it what?
It just kind of came to mind. It reminded me of something I had read about arrays. If you're storing it in an array, you can You can specify it and you can...
variable.
Yeah.
Oh, dollar okay. sign.
Right.
And then the number after it is whatever number of the string variable.
Okay.
And you can use dollar sign asterisk if you want to grab all of the variables and stick them together.
Okay.
Which, the instance that I read...
next week.
Well, the instance that I read was a guy would he had a script for Git, and it would go through and combine all this stuff, whatever Git does for him. But then he needs to add a comment every time he runs his Git thing. And so he says his script Git-M, or whatever it is, or...
Git-M?
Git-M, or I don't know, it's Git okay. something.
Yeah.
And then space, and then he can just type out spaces and everything for a comment, and he grabs all that all those things he wrote, he typed in afterwards, and sticks it in as a comment.
Huh. And Chatter just shared something with you, Matt.
Yeah, I saw.
Just now?
No.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, he's sticking in a lot of stuff they were just talking
yes.
about.
Yeah. So, anyway, well, I know that it's always nice to be able to customize your profile, your Bash yes. RC files.
I use aliases a lot, but the one guy at work, one of the big scripting geniuses, tells me that it's wrong. You shouldn't use aliases. You should use functions. And I say, but aliases are easier, and that's what I'm using.
yeah. Well, and that's another thing that the guy hit on, is the differences between running aliases, functions, and scripts. And at what point do you split those off? But, yeah. Because in functions, perfect. You can call, more... it's multiple lines that you can call and wrap it into your alias or
into
your script.
But it seems aliases is more efficient in that case, because all you're doing is just saying, instead of doing this, do this.
Okay, well, you're right? saying this equals this.
Oh, well, okay, yeah.
Like, right. I have an alias on my personal machines called YumUp,
okay.
which is aliased to, like, I type YumUp, but then it really runs yum sudo yum minus y. In so an upgrade.
Mm-hmm. It upgrades okay. all your stuff.
Right.
right. And I've taken that same idea and I've done apt-up, and it does an apt-get update, and then when that's done, apt-get dist upgrade.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have them chained together in the same
yeah.
command?
Yeah. Yeah, I use ampersands.
You should use two double ampersands, because that means wait for this to finish.
Yeah, wait for
otherwise, it starts to run right away.
Yeah.
So another way to say wait till you finish is with a semicolon. Because a semicolon means end of line, and treat the next command as a new line.
Oh,
and so
okay.
it'll only go to the next line once the first one's complete.
I wasn't aware of that one. The okay. double ampersand. So.
Is that in that scripting book you're reading?
No.
No, okay.
I just knew that.
What scripting book?
I thought, was it last week you talked about?
Yeah.
He picked up a scripting book.
It's a PDF file, actually. But yeah, it's, and it was recommended to me by... Again, one of our scripting geniuses at work, that I should throw that away.
Oh, yeah.
yeah. and he gave me a link to something better.
Oh, okay. Okay. Is it better? Or have you had a chance?
I haven't had a chance to look at it.
That, where I'm doing this training, the next one I'm going to do after that is scripting, Bash scripting.
Hmm.
I've got to work on a little bit of things. This is all for work. They're paying for this. It's all web-based, computer-based training. And, I have to work in a little bit of Windows 7 stuff and a couple other things I have to do for work, but I'm mainly going to use it for this. anyway.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I was a spectator amongst all that. I guess we're moving on to...
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is 313-626- 9140.
Yeah, it's pretty light this week.
Pretty light.
Yep. So it was from Walter, and Walter says that he is in the camp where he would rather pay than have silly ads. Because that was one of the things we talked about last week, was the pay for content model versus the ad model. And I said some things lend them better to the pay for model, like LWN. I subscribe to LWN because I want the content when it's current, not when it's a week old.
Yep.
So I pay the $7 a month and I have an LWN subscription.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other things like SourceForge where the subscription model doesn't really work because you don't go there that often. I don't.
Uh-huh.
But then there's some parts of SourceForge that I wasn't aware of, like their IRC channel and things like that. So
right. But and their wikis. You know, although what may be a good option is still you can do a freemium kind of thing where it strips out the ads every time you go, but it's more of like a donation. Like you say, I'm going to monthly donate $5 to SourceForge, and then every time I go to it, I want to not see ads.
Right, right, right. That's another way you could do it. Yeah. But I think they more lend themselves to an ad-based model, though, because of I think the vast majority of users of SourceForge use it the way I do. I go there to get software.
I agree.
You know? Yeah. So, but he says he much prefers the pay-for model, and he uses an ad blocker to prevent the ads. So.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right.
Featured music of the week.
All
is
right.
Is that the Balkan Gypsy song I picked out?
Yeah.
Or no, was that the... Oh, that was that Drunken Monkey group.
Yeah,
there
here it is. Couldn't find the link, but I found it just now.
The Drunken Monkey group?
Yeah.
It's the Freak Fandango Orchestra.
The Freak Fandango Orchestra.
Yeah, that's the one you sent me. That's the orchestra. That's the band name. And At World's End.
Oh, yeah, from the album Love, Death, and a Drunken Monkey.
Yeah.
I saw that, and I didn't realize it was the Freak Fandango Orchestra. I've got several of their stuff. I must like them, their stuff.
Yeah. So.
Too far, can feel the dragon's breathing, can hear the monster's roar. We will strike the seas now, even if we reach the end. Just tell the mate to bring us a bottle of rum. She said, I'm alive, but I know that it won't be forever. Too far, can feel the dragon's breathing, can hear the monster's roar. We won't strike the seeds now, even if we reach the end. Just tell the mate to bring us a bottle of rum.
Okay.
Thank you for suggesting this, Mary.
Oh, you're very welcome. I was just thinking, oh, I'll throw this out there in case you guys don't have one, and, you know, it's a fallback.
Yeah.
All right.
It came in very handy.
Those are
you know what?
Name.
I don't know. But you know what? I really hate working 5 days. I appreciate you phrasing that.
Thank you for the announcement. What a whiny guy. He's whining because he's got to work 5 days.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
Well, welcome to the real world. All right, so, well, let's wrap this thing up.
All right. So, you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 111.
Seven. 7-11. 7-1-11.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Talbitch.
Saying have a good week. See you next week.
Open source. Linux. Computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.